Thank you. Thank you, Bob. I call my junk mail file on my desktop the Viagra file. I think I'm going to have to rename it. But thank you for a very thoughtful opening presentation. We're now going to hear from James Bruce, who is the former co-chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Thank you. Not quite the whole panel, just one of the working groups. Well, I think it's very encouraging to me to hear several of the my predecessors at this podium talk about the link between water and climate change. I'm going to elaborate on that a bit more and focus primarily on the Canadian situation. Which one do I push?
This button, sir.
That one. Thank you. No? Didn't move.
What's the matter on my computer? Sorry about that.
You can hit the left and hit next. Okay.
Hit on all on here.
Yeah, right. And then hit next.
Okay. Okay. Just before the big meeting in Copenhagen on climate change, where the countries struggled manfully and womanfully, didn't reach any agreement on how to reduce greenhouse gas emissions around the world. the Los Angeles Times, from an area which is short of water and already experiencing serious effects of climate change, had this excellent opinion piece about how water should inform the discussions on climate change and how the working draft that was developed for the conference was withdrawn for some reason which nobody quite understands because it seems to me that through impacts on water the reality of climate change becomes more evident to many people. Where do I find next? Okay, there we go. David Schindler the other day presented something similar to this, but let me explain it a bit more. If you calculate the amount of energy introduced into the lower part of the atmosphere to change the climate from natural sources and from human-induced sources, greenhouse gases, you can produce graphs that look like this, where the blue bar is the temperatures you would expect from the natural external forcing, and that is the changes in the sun's energy reaching the Earth due to sunspots and Earth's rotation and so on, and from volcanic emissions. The red bar is the temperatures you would expect from greenhouse gases, and this graph just shows the ones for North America, the global values and the global land values. And you can see that up until about the 60s, the natural forcing factors were very important in influencing the shifts in global mean temperatures and global climate. But since about 1970, we've seen the greenhouse gases reach a point where they entirely dominate the trend that we're seeing, the warming trend we're seeing. This has a couple of implications. One is it means that since about 1970, we should have seen some impact of climate change. And secondly, that since greenhouse gases are going to dominate the climate for the next four or five decades with the failure of Copenhagen, we should think of the trends we've already seen as being a pretty good indicator of what we might see in the future although possibly accelerating. Well, how have these trends played out in Canada? I still haven't quite figured this. Ah, there it is. Well, there are two things that I'd like to talk about as factors which really influence water systems. One is the temperature trends, and this is the temperature trend from 48, which includes some of the stuff due to the changes in the sun's energy and so on. But it's mostly from, well, a lot of it's from 70 on. And you can see that we had temperatures as increases of 3.5-4 degrees C in the north and the northwest, coming down to about 1 degree C or half a degree C in parts of Ontario and Quebec, and little change on some of the East Coast areas because of changes in ocean circulations that was brought about by the changing climate, causing cooling up until about 1990 in that area, with warming since about 1990. If we'd had a graph, if I'd been able to find a map from 1970 on, this area would have been yellow or pink too on the East Coast. Now, as the atmosphere warms, it holds more water vapor. And okay. I got to do three things. As the atmosphere warms, it holds more water vapor, and that's sometimes called precipitable water. That means that when the atmosphere gets geared up to rain or snow, the intensity of the event is going to increase. And this is what we see. The blue and black areas are areas in the world since about the 60s. That have shown increased frequency of high-intensity rainfalls. So we think we have the warming temperatures, we have more high-intensity rainfalls. Do I push that one first or that one? There we are. Now, if you look at high-intensity rainfalls, the Soil and Water Conservation Society undertook a very major study for North America, which showed that soil erosion would increase substantially, runoff from agricultural lands would increase, carrying with it the nutrients which cause eutrophication and the toxic chemicals into our waterways. If these intense rains become more frequent, that's going to happen much more often. In many urban areas, stormwater overflows into sanitary sewer systems result in direct waste discharge to water bodies, and the number of flooded basement incidents in our communities has been on a rapid rise. So we see this increased eutrophication and contamination of nearshore areas are happening in the Great Lakes and Lake Winnipeg, many other water bodies, with both increased frequency of high-intensity rainfalls, increased intensity of agriculture, and spread of urban areas over larger regions. There you are. Not only does do we have the problems with water quality, with higher water temperatures producing more algal growth and the runoff from more intense rains, but we also have increased flood events. And these are happening all over the place. These are just two examples from far-flung places. In Toronto, this was the largest payout by the insurance industry that they can recall, with the failure of the bridge over on Finch Avenue and the loss of all the services that go with the bridge. And in Pangnirtung in July 2008, we had a very heavy rain event that turned a sort of a tranquil little creek that went through the middle of town into a raging torrent, washed out a huge amount of the thawing permafrost this is on Baffin Island, and completely divided the town in two, washed out their bridges, and made life miserable for them for a long time. Well, at the same time as we've seen these increased intensity of rains and flash floods, we've seen a trend towards more drought conditions. And these are the ones over the world. And look at the bullseye over Alberta, and this is a century-long trend, bullseye over Alberta and Saskatchewan. So the drought that we experienced from 2000 to 2005, which is estimated to have cost the country about $5 billion, will be looked upon in future as rather benign as these trends continue. Whoops. Jeez.
I'm going to lose your space in a second, sir.
You got to give me a minute or two.
Is that it?
Yeah. Now, I don't think things in Alberta are going to get quite this bad, it's not going to be pretty. Average flows of rivers in the south have... Oops. I think you better just stay here. average flows in the rivers of the southern part of Canada, where most people live, have been, on average, falling. Average flows of the rivers of the north have been, in fact, rising. This... graphs show, as examples, the two tributaries of the Mackenzie system. The Liard River, which arises in the Yukon, which is getting a lot more snow from the open waters of the Beaufort Sea. And you see increased flow. The blue bars are for the Liard. You can see that increased flow is occurring in most months, except for a few in the summer. On the other hand, the Athabasca River, which we've heard a lot about from David and from Bob, the flows have been going down quite steadily. And as it traverses that long distance across Alberta with greater evaporation, and it's going down especially in the winter months when low flows are most critical for supplying the oil sands results. And unfortunately, as Bob pointed out the other day, all the environmental assessments and the work of the oil companies has taken an average of these flows, and yet since 72, you've seen these remarkable declines in the flow of the Athabasca River. We've heard from David about the wetlands and peatlands of the north, and these are very important because... First of all, they're an important reservoir of water, but they're also an important reservoir of carbon. And as the permafrost below them melts or thaws, the wetlands tend to disappear, and peatlands disappear, releasing methane, quite a powerful greenhouse gas, and leading to concerns about the possibility of a runaway greenhouse effect. Now, it's not just Arctic ice and permafrost that is melting, and ice roads that are melting and preventing resupply of communities of the north, but ice on the Great Lakes has been gradually disappearing. This shows the trend since 1973 in average winter ice cover on the Great Lakes, and you can see that this is substantially downward. This has a profound effect on the energy balance of these lakes and the ecosystems that live therein, and particularly produces a longer period of stratification where the warm water at the top is separated from the cold bottom water, allowing much more loss of oxygen from the bottom waters. Now, there's been some significant debate about climate science. But Henry Pollack put it this way, ICE asks no questions, presents no arguments, reads no newspapers, listens to no debates. It's not bounded by ideology and carries no political baggage. It just melts. So any Canadian water policy or program has to include adaptation to changes that will require redoubled efforts to reduce erosion and urban sewage overflows, to conserve water in the south, to reduce exposure to flash floods. But we cannot address all the problems for ecosystems and for the water quality through adaptation measures. We must get at the reduction of the rate of change of climate by reducing greenhouse gases. And Canada must, in its own interest, regain a leading role in global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in order to protect our water resources for this and future generations. Thank you.